everyone, and welcome to Minute 129 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Matthew Simpson of a freelance film and television critic. Welcome back to the show, Matthew.
Thank you again for having me. Having a great time so far.
Yeah, we only have another 40 minutes left to this movie. We're getting close.
Yeah.
So minute 129 begins with Mellish giving Henderson more instructions, and ends with Upham taking cover with Miller and Ryan. So we ended things yesterday with the men starting to get ready, starting to, you know, they know that the this battle, this firefight is imminent and it's going to be happening soon. So let's get ready, you know, that type of thing. And, you know, I mean, we talked a little bit earlier in the week, you and I, about the fact that, you know, they had this whole preparation beforehand, you know, where they're getting things ready. And now we're starting to see them implementing by getting into their positions. So I like the way that they do that. You know, that they showed us that, okay, we're getting things ready, and now everyone's just start going to their posts, and we're slowly gonna be able to see what's going on. So, you know, as this minute opens up, we start with Henderson and Mellish. Continuing to try and get ready, you know, and they, you know, he got cut off yesterday when he said, yeah, why don't you check the headspace and she should run. So basically, you know, the idea is they're putting together their machine gun and getting ready to, to make sure that they have a good, line of fire and stuff like that. But to me, I'm trying to figure out why they didn't have all this set up beforehand.
I mean, I think they did, right? I think they had the positions staked out. I think they're just arming up, you know, loading ammo, that kind of thing at this point, is my impression.
But I would think that they would have everything already prepared. I mean, again, we're over today and tomorrow, we're going to see a bunch of things that you think to yourself, wait a second, why didn't they just take care of this beforehand? You know, they had this downtime. So again, maybe it has to do with the fact that I have a little bit of a military background. So I like say to myself, okay, these are things you don't wait for. You know, when you know that something's inevitably going to be happening. But who knows?
I don't have a good answer for this, to be honest. I definitely don't have a military background. My impression is that it's one of two things, or a combination of both. One is that they don't want to have like live rounds ready when there's nothing going on, maybe. And the other is that they need to set it up so that Upham is running around the battlefield so we can follow him for the movie. Sure. Is what it probably
even,
is.
Even though theoretically we shouldn't be needing to do that. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So I think it is one of those sort of Hollywood things where we need, you know, we need our insert character to be able to move around the battlefield with purpose. So that's why they don't have, like, the one thing that bothers me about it, if there's anything, because they do like set up, you can see them earlier setting up things like Molotov cocktails and placing grenades and such and mines all around the place. But then why wouldn't they have the 30 cal ammo with the 30 cal machine gun at the top of the tower? That does not make sense to me.
That's right. That's one of the questions that
but
again, it's to give up of something to do.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. I guess we'll have to let that one slide, you know, from that perspective.
I do think they talk at one point about the 30 cal maybe moving, so maybe they have it at the first position, you know, that's the backup position, but that also doesn't necessarily make sense. I guess maybe it makes sense if they expected an oncoming force to be a lot smaller. But it is, yeah. It is. I think it's just for the movie, not for accuracy.
Yeah, for sure. And then we get a shot of another soldier putting his clip in his M1. We can't really tell who it is, but you know, he's smoking a cigarette. That's what we can tell. He's one of I guess Henderson's men. And then what's great is, you know, the camera focuses on his face, and he takes the cigarette out of his mouth and turns his head, looking out of a broken pane in the window, and it gives us an amazing shot of the Alamo, basically. You know, we see the bridge, and we see one of the other guys on the bridge. So I really love the shot, because it shows us the, you know, a distant view of the, you know, of men getting ready for the whole thing. Because you have, you know, guys running across the bridge and getting ready, getting into cover, and stuff like that. Again, what everyone is doing here, as we just mentioned, are stuff that they probably should have done beforehand. Because one of the guys that's running, we see a few seconds later, it's actually Upham, who's carrying, you know, some ammo cases, along the way and stuff like that. And then we hear someone scream, "Upham, hustle up." And, you know, to move a little quicker and stuff like that. But again, I don't understand why they didn't make sure that all this stuff, that this ammo was in the right place beforehand.
I mean, the other explanation is that it was Upham's job to do that, and he hadn't done it yet.
Because he was too busy smoking and listening to Edith Piaf.
Yeah, and because at this point he doesn't, you know, the end of the movie has him transformed from a, you know, naive boy to a hardened man, and he hasn't made that transition yet. And sort of,
would you classify him as a hardened man at that point? I don't know. I think
I mean, at the end of the movie, he certainly at least loses his innocence, we'll say.
Right, you know? He loses his innocence, but I think it's more along the lines that he finally sees the reality of who Steamboat Willie really is.
Yeah, you know, and about the sacrifices you have to make in wartime, and about the changes to yourself and others that will happen. And I feel like, it, you know, up before that point, it is possible that the reason that the ammo isn't at the bell tower is just that, like, he didn't feel the urgency in the way that he maybe should have is a possibility. I'm just spitballing here, but that seems like a possibility to me.
Okay, I mean, again, we did see, you know, there was a scene a few weeks ago where Jackson is pulling up a machine gun up there. You know, so you'd think at that point they would have made sure they had as much ammo as possible, because, again, thinking about it logistically, you know, if they're in a situation where they need more ammo, how is Upham going to get that to them? Because he has to tie it to a rope that they're going to be able to pull up. And that's something that makes more sense to do when you're not in the middle of combat, as opposed to beforehand. So again, it doesn't make much sense, you know, from a realistic perspective, but within the context of the movie, it's needed.
You know, it all comes back to what the movie needs, for sure. Like, that Upham needs to be able to run around and witness things happening.
Correct.
And, Putting the ammo belt on his neck.
Witness things and also, you know, at some point decide not to do anything.
Yeah.
From that same perspective, yeah.
Yeah, spoiler alert for your episodes, like, what, in like 2 weeks?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I think it's like maybe it's 3 weeks.
In a while anyway, not this week.
Within the next month, let's put it that way. Let's put it this way: we only have another 2 months of episodes, so it's, you know, another 8 weeks. So it will happen within that time frame. And so Upham then takes cover and starts opening up the ammo cases and starts pulling the bandoliers out. And as he's doing that, then the shot changes and we see something really strange. We see one of the characters, and I believe it's Toynbee, I'm not really sure. But he's like spreading something with his hand on the ground, like it looks like dust, which is probably gunpowder. That's what I would think.
But I think he's actually covering the. He's strung the line from the mines to the detonator, and I think he's covering that line to make it at least a little bit less obvious. It feels like.
That you're right. You're 100% right. That is what he's doing. I Didn't even think about that fact.
Wow. Yeah, it does feel like, why would you bother at this point? But also, old habits die hard, maybe. I don't know. Feels like they're either going to... I mean, maybe he does have to wait for them to walk past it, so I guess it makes sense that he would be covering it. But it does feel like a bit of a slapdash job, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure. But no, but you're right. It definitely, that's definitely what it is. I should have realized that. So thank you for pointing it out. Yeah, that's great. And then, you know, he continues with taking all of the you know, the wire and continuing, you know, with the detonation wire, moving back you know, through this particular building. And you know, then he like sits in a corner and gets ready to continue, you know, making sure that everything is done properly and stuff like that. And then the shot changes after he sits down, and we see both Miller and Ryan running to take cover behind some debris. And
yeah, and they're in like an impact crater, it looks like, too.
Yeah. And then we can hear the noise get even closer, you know, of the tank, and we see smoke billowing in the distance, which again, I don't think it's from the tanks themselves, but it's trying to show us also that it's impending danger, you know, from that perspective.
Yeah.
And then this... Miller takes out his the clip of his gun, which again doesn't make any sense at this point. You'd think that he would have made sure that he had a full clip beforehand as opposed to taking it out.
Yeah, I think it sort of would make sense if he was like checking the clip and putting it back in, but he does just sort of whip it out, doesn't he? Like off to the side.
Yeah. And then Upham shows up where they are and jumps into this impact crater along with them. Which again, it's a little strange. It's a little strange that he shows up here, but you know, tomorrow we'll explain a little more as to why he's there. But you know, it's just you know, it's a great point to cut the minute just to have him show up. Yeah. So again, most of this minute is just these guys getting ready. No dialogue, or almost no dialogue, except for someone yelling to Upham to hustle up. And that's it. You know, they're ready for whatever is about to come to them.
Yeah, I think the scene would be less effective if it didn't have dialogue, actually. Like, we already trust that they're good at their jobs and know what to do, so watching them just prepare for that is, I think, smart writing, smart filmmaking.
Okay, I would agree with that. I would say that's very fair. And you know, it also got me thinking a little more about the way that you know, we were talking about at the beginning of the week, where they expanded the you know, where we talked a little bit more about the stories that they were telling. You know, where Miller was telling, you know, more of a story, because again, it helps us get a better understanding of who these characters are based on their stories and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and it makes me wonder if there are more stories out there that we just didn't even know about that, you know, that they cut.
There certainly are. I was looking at the script actually between episodes today, and
cool.
We talked earlier about stuff being, stories that Miller was telling in the novelization that aren't in the film, and those stories are in the script, and there's more stories from each of them. So if you have the inclination to read the script of the film, it's actually a very well written script, but there's a lot more in it there. It's for this kind of thing. It's
like who else tells stories? Anyone? Are there characters that tell stories that we don't know, that in the movie they don't tell stories? Like, because we had Ryben tell a story. And we had Ryben has told a number of stories in the movie already. We had Wade tell a story at one point. we had obviously Ryan and Miller. So are there other characters that tell some sort of story that you remember from looking at the script?
So we get more from Miller, for sure. I'm just sort of scrolling back to it now, actually. So bear with me 1 second. We get a more, at that moment we talked about before, where Ryan is telling a story and then Miller doesn't tell a story. Miller tells a story, the one you talked about. And then Edward Burns' character tells a bit more of a story. I believe that's Ryan, right?
Yeah, that's Ryan.
And the other big difference is actually that they are all talking together. They're not two separate groups.
Okay.
They are all together talking, waiting. Where is it? And yeah, Ryan's story is a little different. He also tells another little anecdote. They talk a little bit about, like, where are you right now? Like, what are you thinking about? What are you thinking about at home? And they each have a nice little snippet of that. It's too much to sort of go into, and I only just scanned it for the first time, like, between our episodes. So, but there's a lot there. There's a lot there with a little bit of writing, and it's really well. It's really effective from what I can tell so far.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. All right. And that's all I have to say about this minute. There's nothing else that I came up with. Did you have anything else you wanted to mention about this minute?
No, I mean, I'm just going to echo the whole thing I said before about the sound design. The, like, slow build of the tanks approaching, I think, is wonderful. And the urgency with which they begin to move. They sort of move faster and faster through the minute as the sound of the tanks gets closer and closer. I think it's really well put together.
Okay, very cool. All right, so every Thursday we have a segment called Say What Thursday, where basically it's a little game, which this movie, as we all know, has a lot of recognizable or famous actors in it. And so the game is a simple one. I'm going to give you a quote of a movie and I'm going to tell you what year it is. And you have to try and tell me who the actor is who says the line and in what movie it is. Okay, so obviously there are a lot of actors in this movie, so I've narrowed it down to just three actors that it could be. Okay, so your three choices are, it's either going to be Vin Diesel, Tom Hanks, or Adam Goldberg.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go with the first one. It's from a movie from 2015, and the quote is, "Nothing sadder than locking a beast in a cage."
That's Vin Diesel in Riddick, probably. That's Riddick, right?
It's not in Riddick. Nope. It is Vin Diesel. You're correct about that.
Well, if it's not Riddick, then it's Fast and Furious, whatever number came out that year, right?
Yes. It's Furious 7. Furious
right. 7. Right.
All right. Next one. Okay. The next one is from 2006. Well, you remember that little blackout we had a few years back? We blamed Canada. Canada blamed Michigan.
2006 blackout. Why am I blanking on this? This sounds so familiar.
It could be Vin Diesel, Tom Hanks, or Adam Goldberg.
I don't know. Tom Hanks.
No.
No. I do not. I recognize. This sounds so familiar, but I could not. I cannot place it. So I.
Okay, it's a movie directed by Tony Scott.
Tony Scott in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I blanking on this so harshly? It's not Tom Hanks. It's Tony Scott. So is it Goldberg?
Yeah, obviously it's Goldberg.
Yeah. I don't know what movie it is, though.
Okay. Denzel Washington's in this movie.
Oh, so that narrows it down to every Tony Scott movie. 2006 Vampire?
Nope.
So was it a yes or a no?
That was a no.
Oh. 2006, Denzel Washington, Tony Scott. What else came out in 2006? Oh, is it the time travel-y one?
Yes, it is.
What's it called? Remember what it's called, but the one where you can like see back in time or see ahead in time and he has to prevent an explosion. What's it
Deja
called?
vu. Deja vu.
That's the one.
That's right. So I'm actually going to tell you the full quote because it's pretty funny. Adam Goldberg's character says, "Well, you remember that little blackout we had a few years back? We blamed Canada. Canada blamed Michigan." And someone else says, "Half the Northeast. You're saying you guys 50 million homes." Well, I still say we blame Canada, but right, next one. Okay, the next one is from 2019. Depression is rage turned inward. Forgive is to release the anger for someone or something.
It's Tom Hanks in 2019. Which one came out in 2019? I feel like I should know this off the top of my head, but I don't.
You are correct that it is Tom Hanks.
Can you say one more time?
Depression is rage turned inward. Forgive is to release the anger for someone or something.
Is that the Mr. Rogers movie, A Beautiful
Yes,
Day in the
it is.
Neighborhood?
Yes, it is. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Excellent.
Which is a great movie, actually.
Yes. Yes, I would agree. Okay, the next one is from 1993. It's what everybody in this car needs is some good old worthwhile visceral experience.
1993. It's too early for Diesel, so wow. This game is really like working me over, actually.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. It just
It's meant to be
turns out
fun. It's meant to be
my trivia skills are not up to par lately. So 1993, I'm gonna say it's Tom Hanks, and 1993 was what, Philadelphia?
And that is not correct.
No. So then is it neither thing is correct?
That is correct. That both are incorrect.
So it's definitely Goldberg. And what did
Ooh.
he do in 1993? Oh wait. Wait a minute. He was in Dazed and Confused, wasn't he? It's
Yes,
Dazed
he
and
was.
Confused.
Excellent. Very good. Okay, and the final one from 2001. Alicia, John's always been a little weird.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Alicia, John's always been a little weird.
That sounds like Vin Diesel, and 2001 would make it what, Fast and the first Fast and Furious movie, maybe?
Nope, you were wrong on both accounts.
Oh. 2001. So it's, what was the name you said again? Just say the
Alicia.
line one more time. So it's
Alicia, John's always been
Adam
a little
Goldberg,
weird.
and it's gonna be he was in Beautiful Mind that year, right? That's probably it.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. Alicia Nash, John Nash. There you
Yeah, there you go.
go. All right, great. Thank you very much for playing.
That was way harder than I did not have those come into my brain as fast as I would have liked to. So
Okay,
that's
but
fun. Thank you.
you did fairly well with three Adam Goldberg guesses, so that's still pretty good. I give you credit for that because most people wouldn't be able to get the Adam Goldberg quotes.
Yeah. I've always
So
liked him
nicely,
actually though.
nicely
So
done.
he's an interesting presence that I've always really liked.
Yes, I definitely agree. I always love them in on Friends.
I actually really like he did a movie, he was in a movie, I should say, with Val Kilmer, actually the year after A Beautiful Mind, called The Salton Sea, which I really like. And he plays sort of a chaotic meth addict in that movie, and he's really good.
Okay, cool. All right, so Matthew, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, the easiest way again is to find me on the social medias. You can find me at Matthew AF in most places, but most frequently on the Threads and Blue Sky. You can also find all my recent podcast appearances and writing on my personal portfolio website, which is stretched.ca. And then last but not least, you can also check out the Critics Association that I helped co-found in late 2022. That is the Cascadia Film and Television Critics Association. You'll find me and also a host of other great critics from the Cascadia region of North America at cascadiacritics.com.
Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. So, Matthew, you feel like coming back tomorrow to finish off the week and see what happens during the rest of this preparation?
Absolutely, I do.
Excellent. All right. So, until tomorrow, earn this.
Earnest.
Solitude.